Welcome, everyone, to the Amazingly Average Show. I am your host for this week, Dan the Third. And with me are Earl.
You just embrace it.
I mean, you got to embrace it.
But yes, that's me.
That's you. Okay. And Scott.
Embrace the Third.
And to start off, we wanted to just cover... Sort of, it's been a weird year, but I wanted to focus on the good parts of 2016. So I'm going to talk real quick about not any specific thing, just like your maybe one of your favorite movies or one of your favorite games or books or anything that you had, or just life thing that was good in 2016.
Life thing. Well,
it doesn't have to be that, but...
Well, I mean, Scott had a big life thing this year.
Well, I'm having big life things. I'm married and having a child in, what's today, the 20th? 7 days is the due date, so...
That's a pretty big year.
It's a pretty big year. But other than that, relatively uneventful.
He forgot the biggest part of his year. He got to meet me. So
I met Earl in the flesh, and it was magnificent.
Actually, you both met me this year.
It's true.
As for me, I guess we can start off with personal. We'll go personal. It's weird, because personally, it's been a fantastic year for me. Professionally, it's been an awful year. Worldwide, it's just been terrible. But, this year, like I said, I met Scott. I went to New York Comic Con. I went to San Diego Comic Con. And I went to PAX East. I went to WrestleMania and SummerSlam. I went to NASA, which was amazing.
Were you ever at home? Jeez.
If you ever get the chance, it was just like awe-inspiring. I just felt like a kid the entire time I was there. I went to Warner Brothers Studio Yard in Burbank, California. That was another fantastic thing, seeing all the old props and costumes from the Harry Potter films, seeing the props and costumes from the Suicide Squad and Batman vs. Superman. Going into probably my absolutely favorite room of all time, the old Batman movie prop room. They had, props. They had the Batmobiles from the Batman 89 movie, the Batman, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, the Tumbler from Batman Begins. They had the bomb from The Dark Knight Rises that he drops into the water. They had the bat. They had a bat signal. They had Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman costume.
How did they have the bomb from that movie if it blew up, though?
But yeah, I traveled to Ireland first time I went to Europe, and that was absolutely awe-inspiring. I nerded out, went on a Game of Thrones tour. saw the wall and all that other stuff. So yeah, personally, it was just a year of adventure and travel for me. So that was fantastic.
Yeah, that sounds like I go back to my earlier question. Were you ever at home? Like, are you at home now? Where are you recording from?
Like I said, professionally, it's been a weird year, but just kind of on that note, for most people, Christmas, I guess Scott has the same issue. This is like the busiest time of the year for me. So I've not been on vacation since September, just because it gets so hectic this time of the year. And as soon as that's over, I'm back on the road somewhere. I don't know where yet.
So based on that, I have a pretty good idea, but what was your favorite movie of 2016?
Before I say this, and it's not what I forgot to mention, the two big things I also did as well, or two other big things I did. I went to the world premiere of Batman vs. Superman, which is, whatever you think of the movie, that is just something that I will always cherish. Like, I got to see, I saw the cast there and all this other stuff. It was fantastic. And I went to the world premiere of Ninja Turtles. We went over this last podcast, not a fan of the movie. But the fact of the matter is, I'm in Madison Square Garden, and Vanilla Ice comes out singing a ninja rap, and I'm at the world premiere of a Ninja Turtles movie, literal world premiere. I was just, geeking out, huge kid. It was just absolutely mind-blowing. It was fantastic. To Dan's question, and this is something I've been thinking about when we did the show last weekend, I've been thinking about it. My favorite movie of the year is not a comic book movie.
Really?
It's actually Zootopia.
And okay.
Good answer.
I revisited this weekend, actually. And it's so, like, Zootopia has a very, not very subtle social message. But, like, watching it at the end of 2016, you see how relevant it is. Like, how much that kind of fear and anger they tapped into actually played a role in this year.
And it's a great movie because, like, I think all good children's movies should be able to appeal to adults as well and have some sort of message for them. Because it works for kids because they don't really get the undertones of it. But then for adults, it's really an actually really good commentary about racism and police issues, like all that stuff. And so I really do. I think that's a good choice. I really love that movie.
And that's why adults don't like things like, you know, Disney Channel things, because it doesn't appeal at all to adults. It's just supposed to amuse kids.
Yeah, I was about to say, and that's the weird thing about Disney, because you get, like Zootopia is Disney. That appealed to a broad range of people. I hear similar things about Moana. But then you get a Disney Channel, and Disney Channel is purely like, we're just going to appeal to tweens and nobody else.
Seriously.
Yeah, I think there's a difference with movies. I think they try to do that a little better.
Yeah.
But Disney's been on fire in terms of their
box office. I mean,
and just quality as well.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, and I'm not... Okay, I want to preface this by saying that I absolutely love Disney. I don't know anybody who doesn't. Well, I actually do know people who don't like Disney. But, like, I mean, all of us grew up on Disney. Like, you have a favorite Disney animated movie. So I don't want to slander them. I've enjoyed almost everything they put out this year that I've seen. That my second favorite movie of the year is The Jungle Book, and that's also from them.
Really?
Yes.
Hmm. I thought it was good, but I didn't love it.
I think because I've not really grown up on the animated movies, so it's like something. It's relatively new for me. Like, it's a remake, but it's relatively new. But I think the big thing for me with Disney is that they're amazing with the quality, but they did that by just paring down a lot of movies, because you like almost everything they came out with this year, with the exception of two movies, were big hits. But they also came up with like 10 movies.
Right, you throw enough darts at the board, one of them might hit a bullseye.
Well, no, I'm saying,
or eight of them might hit a bullseye.
Well, I'm
no?
saying like they did the
first
opposite.
Thing they didn't put out that many movies.
Yeah, it's like, and I get quality control, but at the same time, I like, you know, okay, they look at, you know, we'll say whatever about Warner Brothers or Sony or Paramount, but they tried a bunch of different stuff. They didn't all work, but you can see like the grand experiment with them. Like, you know, like Warner Brothers put out one of my favorite movies of this year, in The Nice Guys. At the same time, they put out one of my least favorite movies of this year, with Suicide Squad. You know, they had...
Yeah.
You know, they have, what is it? Is it Creator of Beauty? Is that theirs? No.
Yeah, that...
That's
theirs. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not, you know, doing that's too failed. Well, but it's something different and unique. Where most of Disney's movies this year were kind of just big blockbusters. I mean, it's hard to say animation.
It does feel like that.
But it was. I mean, it was Star Wars, it's Disney, it's Pixar, it's Marvel.
But Zootopia.
Zootopia,
though.
Yeah, it's a new brand, but it's still kind of in their wheelhouse of a CG film.
I mean, I think the thing Disney's really good at is even their smaller movies feel like they are going to be franchised. You know, they're so good at that, and I can see how you could fault that in saying like everything they put out is either based on a franchise or they're going to put toys out for or something. But for them, I think that's their strategy.
I didn't even say it was based on a franchise. Like, I'm never going to hate people for putting out movies in franchises. It's just that, like you said, they're smaller movies, but I don't think any of their movies this year were like under 100 million. Like, there were no small movies for them.
And, you know, that's something that's been going on in games, too, where, you know, there's not a lot of mid-budget games that are made.
But a lot of other people still do it. I mean, like, again, you know, you get... I don't want to use Sony, because Sony's just a terrible studio. But, you know, they had Assassin's Creed this year. They had the Angry Birds movie. They had, you know, Ghostbusters. They had... Wow, they really are not a good example. I'm sure everybody else has really had a bad year. Paramount had like Born, the Born, Oh, Jason Bourne. They had Ninja
It's
Turtles.
Star Trek.
They had Star Trek. But they...
Nothing did well for them.
Well, no, I don't. I think Jason Bourne is fine. It's forgettable. I think Star Trek Beyond is fine. It's forgettable. Ninja Turtles is fine, but forgettable. I think that's kind of what they put out. Like, you know, next year Universal is going to be back on the big stage with Fast 8 and Despicable Me 3.
The thing is, though, like, if you were running a movie studio, would you rather have 20 movies that were good, you know, fine, whatever, or 10 movies that were
guaranteed
really, really good, well-regarded, and made lots of money?
Well,
you know,
it's
sort of like the rock star approach,
like
the EA approach.
Yeah, like, I can't fault them on their strategy. And like I said, I enjoyed everything I've seen of theirs this year, so I'm not going to fault them on that. It's just, I feel like it's... I want the Disney that doesn't mind taking a risk on smaller movies as well, because... And I always use comic books as an example, and I always hate beating up on it. I don't want anything to become like the comic book industry where it's Batman, Spider-Man, Superman, X-Men, and stuff like that, and then everything else is such seen as such a risk that you don't do anything but superhero comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough when those are the ones that are making money, and...
Yeah. And that's the catch 22. It's like, because I understand where Disney's coming from, because you know they went through a period where a lot of movies just didn't do well. You know, we remember Prince of Persia. There was John Carter of Mars. There was like My Mom's an Alien or whatever that is called.
They had a long string of animated movies that didn't do well either.
Yeah, but
before like Frozen and Tangled.
Yeah, and Tangled had its own problems where it did well, but because of its long production cycle and stuff, I don't think it, you know, it clearly did not make as much money as Frozen. But yeah, and for, you know, there was that weird period where Damon and Pixar tried to go through a divorce that didn't work out.
Seems to have worked out, man, though. Because John Lasseter's killing it with Disney, and then Pixar doesn't seem to be doing...
as hot.
I think Pixar's dropped maybe a little bit, but you know, they're still doing well.
Yeah, I mean, okay, we'll move on because
we can talk about that.
But yeah, before we move on, I wanted to get your answer.
Yeah. So I was thinking about this. I'll go video games. I think my favorite game of the year was probably Titanfall 2. Surprisingly,
that is a surprising answer.
Yeah,
I'm not surprising as much as, you know, I don't really know people who play it.
Yeah, it sold really poorly. I think a lot of that had to do with it coming out literally the week after Battlefield 1 and the week before Call of Duty.
That's, you know, a terrible time to sell anything.
It's the worst time. Worst. I don't know what they were thinking, you know.
The funny thing about that is that two of those games were EA, so... EA knew what they were aiming for with Battlefield. Like, I get Call of Duty, like, even Call of Duty comes out at the same time. But you could have been like, we have one game coming out the week before. Do we want to have the other one the week after?
Right. You know, and it's a shame. But, you know, the single player, which Titanfall 1 didn't have a single player, it was multiplayer only. And, you know, this was Infinity, you know, the people who left Infinity Ward, who made the best, you know, some of my favorite games, Modern Warfare and Modern Warfare, more Modern Warfare 1, what is one of my favorite games ever. Mostly for for single player and multiplayer. And so it's got really cool mechanics. It changes a lot of things. It doesn't overstay its welcome. And the multiplayer is pretty good. I mean, I don't play it. I'm not like still playing it because I kind of bounce off multiplayer pretty quickly, but just for the single player, I think it was, I mean, it wasn't to me. I mean, people keep talking about how great a year for games it was, and I think there was a lot of good games, but there wasn't a lot of great games for me.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have a game of the year right now. Like, I'll go through some games over the holiday to see. Like, I would say Overwatch is probably my favorite game I played this year. I like Titanfall, like Gears of War 4, but like, there's nothing that I loved. Nothing really stood out.
Yeah, there was no Skyrim for me this year. You know, there were, it was
whatever, Skyrim.
Like, well, there was Skyrim, but you know what I mean. like the year Skyrim came out, Skyrim was hands down my favorite game of that year. But this year, it's like, you know, I play Battlefield. I like it. I'll continue to play it and continue to like it. Same thing with Overwatch. Maybe Overwatch I like more than Battlefield. But, you know, there's nothing that I, like, loved that came out this year.
Wait, so Earl, did you put much time into Overwatch?
It's funny. I put more time into the beta. Cause it's not even that I don't enjoy playing the game. It's that I enjoy playing it with friends. And my friends, trying to get my friends together for any type of session is just like pulling teeth.
Yeah.
So we've always been,
I know,
like,
that.
I'm only like a level 7 or 8 in it. I wanted to go...
I mean, like, cause I think in general, if you look at the, you know, big websites, I think the main, you know, they're either giving Game of the Year to Uncharted 4 or Overwatch. You know, and they're obviously very different. There's a lot of fighting about should a multiplayer-only game win, but I think Overwatch, you know, from the out, I played a little of the beta, but, you know, it's such a well-made game, and the art style's so good. It's just, it's hard with just multiplayer, like you're talking about.
Yeah, but I don't understand why that should, if the multiplayer's done right, I don't see why that should limit a game that's, like, saying that, oh, books written in the first person can't win Book of the Year because they need to be written in the third person. It's like,
well, no, I don't think it disqualifies it, but I guess the point we were making, and I could be wrong, is that it's hard to kind of understand it if you can't necessarily get a constant feel. Like, my enjoyment of that game is based off of other people, because, like, I play with friends, and if I don't get them around...
Like, I have no problem with Overwatch winning... objective Game of the Year awards, like it won at the Game Awards, and I, you know, I like it from the outside. Just I have a hard time wanting to get it and get into it just because of the commitment that is there. You know, it's a very teamwork heavy game, and I would love to be able to dive deep and be able to get really good at one game like Overwatch, but it just has never really happened. Me.
I know what you mean. I felt the same way when Heroes of the Storm came out. Like, I really enjoyed playing it, and I wanted to get good at it, but I just don't have that kind of time, you know? It's difficult. Like, you always hover, like, I always hover somewhere between, like, the really bad players and the really good players, somewhere in the middle, where it always seems like the team that I'm with is either, like, crushing the enemy team or getting obliterated.
That seems about right. For most people, because I think that's another thing with online only games. To Dan's point, it's like I feel like there's so much of a commitment to remain good. Like, because you can't last time I played Overwatch was around Halloween because of the Halloween content, and now I want to play for Christmas. But I can't necessarily take off 2 months and jump back into the game and expect to not get demolished.
Yeah, it's interesting, but I think as we move forward. I think these kind of games will be, I think Overwatch will be around for a while, actually. I think, you know, they're trying to start up their leagues, and it'll be interesting to see if it takes off as a spectator sport at all. I have doubts that first-person shooters will be gaming, you know, sort of as mainstream as MOBAs are, but...
I find first-person shooters difficult to watch, like as a as a spectator, because it's difficult to get a field of, you know, a field of vision, like to be able to see everything that's going on.
I also think, and I mean, I guess it could be different with MOBAs, it's because it's so focused on a single character. Like, it's really hard to get a just scale sometimes. Like, I know, like, I watch Splatoon sometimes, and it's not the best example, but because that's all you focus on, like, one character and one perspective, you miss out on, like, the entire, like, a lot of what's going on with, like, MOBAs and stuff have a, like, they tend to kind of have a more isometric view, so you can see more of the battlefield.
Right. And you can see, like if you're watching from a first-person point of view, you can only see what they see. You can't see the guy coming from behind, you know, some... like battle axe or something. I don't know, but you can watch as like battles happen.
I think that there will be if this becomes a big thing, that there will be a camera that's just for, you know, how football
spectator camera.
Yeah, like football isn't, you know, first person perspective, even though the people who are playing are playing in first person. So I think they're, you know, I think they're either with VR, there's ways to, I think someone will figure out eventually, but that's for the future. So we're going to jump to a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away and talk about Star Wars. Rogue One just came out last week, and we're going to talk about Rogue One. We're also going to talk about sort of Star Wars in general, but I really want to get Earl's take on Rogue One first.
Wow, just throwing me under the bus at the start, huh?
No, we're gonna start with you. We'll come back to Scott and I's perspective, and then we'll sort of, you know, come to an agreement.
Let's get the dissenting opinion, like, out there. So
I think I should preface this with saying that I think the biggest realization coming out of Rogue One for me is I'm just not that into Star Wars. And I feel like there's a certain amount of investment in the universe that's needed for you to really enjoy this movie. Because so much of it, I don't want to say so much of it, but it's because it's thrown in blanks for people, it's kind of fan servicey in that way. I'm not going to say it's not a complete movie, but so much of it is like, okay, we need to, like, how do we tie this into A New Hope?
Right.
Like, okay. And this is going to be a big spoiler for the movie. I apologize. But, you know, for 30-some-odd years, 40 years almost, everybody's always talked about, like, why did they build the Death Star with that one weakness? Mm-hmm. And you find out that it was actually built on purpose so that the rebels couldn't exploit it, which I'm fine with. I'm not, however, fine with the fact that her father makes it the most difficult thing in the world to figure out.
It is pretty difficult.
He sends her a message through somebody else, which tells her that there is a potential weakness. But in order for her to figure out that weakness, she has to get the blueprints of this device, which only he has, or they have to go to a specific, like, storage unit. That is so many steps to find out this weakness. And not only that, it's such a tiny weakness that you have to have, like, this pinpoint accurate shot to get it as we earn in A New Hope.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like the shaft, like, they talk about, like, the fact that it's a glaring weakness. It's like a 2-meter-wide hole in a thing the size of a moon. I don't think that's a glaring weakness.
Yeah, you know? That's a, like, he's so proud of it. I'm like, you could not have made this any more difficult. But and you know, that's a big part of it. I understand that they needed to get a mission and they needed it for a reason, but I'm just like, that is such, it's so convoluted to fit into what we know about it. And I get that he's trying to hide it, but couldn't he have hit, like, more than one failsafe? And that was something that took me out. The other thing, and this is a much larger issue with the movie itself for me, is I just didn't care about any of the characters. I don't think any of them really get any time to develop, and I don't think they have any real arc. Like, the character...
Did you like the robot, at least?
I like the robot.
Okay. Well, yeah. The robot honestly had... admittedly, some of the, well, the best lines and some of the most personality.
Yeah, because he was the only one who actually developed over the course of the movie, and that was mostly his trusting of Jin, or her trusting of him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I know her name. I don't know anybody else's name. I just called him Milliard, Escape Pod.
Well, yeah, they did a horrible job of naming the characters. It's, you know. I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. Like, Han Solo is a pretty bad name, but it's just so in our culture.
But I also feel like, I mean, they do... I mean, I guess part of it is that there's less characters to focus on in the original Star Wars, that you get to know them.
Yeah.
With this one, like, okay, like, the first 20 minutes, half an hour or so, is very disjointed, as you go from, like, okay, we're going to introduce this character, we're going to introduce this character, we're going to introduce this plot point, we're going to introduce this plot point, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And like, it settles down once they kind of all converge on the same planet. But I don't really necessarily find the next few, like, the next half an hour that interesting. The other thing I don't get, and I, again, it's one of those things where I feel like they have to tie it into A New Hope somewhat, is, like, they used the Death Star twice. And both times, like, oh, just keep it on low. Just keep it on low. We just want to build a city. And, like, they just want to do this because, like, it doesn't make any sense in the movie that the villains are like, oh, we're just building up a city to send them a message. It's basically, like, the only time, the first time we see it active is in A New Hope, so they can't use it at full blast.
Well, they also, there's a bit of a defense for that. They don't want to use the weapon because the Imperial Senate still exists, and the Imperial Senate still has some power. If they found out that the Empire had a super weapon, they'd be able to throw support with the rebellion. It's not until after the Emperor dissolves the Imperial Council in the beginning of Episode 4, A New Hope, that they actually use the weapon. The whole idea behind the weapon is so that they don't need the Imperial Senate to be the bureaucracy.
Well, I was also confused. I could be wrong. Because I thought the Death Star wasn't fully operational in A New Hope until, like, the climax.
No, they blew up Alderaan.
But okay, maybe I'm mistaken. I thought it, like, I could have sworn they mentioned, like, it's not fully operational in that movie at some point. But it seems to be good to go during the course of this movie.
No, they do.
The climax was they had to get around Yavin, the big planet.
But
it wasn't
that.
The fact that it wasn't.
No, but they do mention at some point that it's not.
No, they do. Earl, you're right. In the beginning of A New Hope, the generals are all around a circle, and Taig says, until this battle station is operational, we are vulnerable. Like, he says that. So maybe they're not aware of the test, something like that. I don't know. Tarkin wasn't in the room. Tarkin, you know, was there for the test. They don't know. They haven't tested whether or not it can blow up a planet. They tested to see that it
worked. But they could have tried it twice.
Well, yeah, they could have, but then we go back to their earlier argument. They don't want to alert the Senate that it exists.
I think, okay. Let's go back to Rogue One a little bit, because I think they did as good a job as they could have done with tying it right into Episode 4, considering the fact that Episode 4 came out in 1977, wasn't necessarily planned to be this huge franchise, right? It came out as Star Wars, it wasn't Episode 4. So, you know, it's sort of like trying to attach this modern thing to this very old but sacred, you know, satellite, right? It's a very tricky, and, you know, just the fact that they did it at all and didn't completely have it blow up in their face is sort of a miracle in and of itself. So maybe that's maybe why I give it a little bit more credit than
going back to my thesis statement, is I think that's why I think you need, like, your investment into Star Wars also helps or hinders your enjoyment of this movie. I'm not saying
I will agree with that.
I'm not saying that you can't enjoy it on its own, but yeah, I do think that, like, for people like you who appreciate throwing in this backstory, throwing in this gap, it's just a larger appreciation of the universe. Where, like, me taking this as a movie, like, I treat Star Wars as a film franchise, and that's it. Like, it's not, like, the be all end all of movies that,
right?
I'm not saying that
you're not reading comic books.
Yeah, but, you know, there are people who are in love with the Star Wars universe who can tell you every minor character.
Yeah,
every minor character.
Well, it was
and expanded novel and cartoon and video game and Ewok special.
Well, the thing about the you go ahead, Dan.
I was just going to say that I definitely see your point, and I think that it's been an interesting year or two, if you know, because I want to talk about a little bit, just a quick aside about Gotham, because I think Gotham and Fantastic Beasts kind of fit into Rogue One. You know, they all kind of are in a similar space, right? Where you can watch them on their own, but if you know the stuff that comes after, they're much more enjoyable.
See, you know? I'm going to disagree on Gotham, and disagree on Fantastic Beasts. Gotham, and this is a discussion I've had with friends time and time again, because a lot of people don't like the show for this reason, is that Gotham is not true to any canon of Batman. There is no version of Gotham. There's no version of Batman that can fit properly into the universe that Gotham sets up. And I'm okay with that because there's so many different universes of Batman. There's the Adam West universe, there's the Tim Burton universe, there's the Christopher Nolan universe, there's the comic universe, there's the animated series, there's the Brave and the Bold, there's Beware the Batman, there's the Batman v Superman of the cinematic universe. So you can have all of those Batmans, but Gotham doesn't need to properly lead to any of them as it is now. So my enjoyment actually comes from the reverse and seeing them taking these characters and seeing what they can do with them. Like, there are certain characters who carry half plot armor on them. They're not going to kill Bruce. They're not going to kill Gordon or anything like that. Fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, when Oswald Cobblepot shows up, or when someone who you know what they become, you know, that means more to you than someone who's only seen like The Dark Knight, right?
Yeah.
And I agree there's definitely ways you can, you know, I think the most devout, there are people who love Star Wars who will hate Rogue One because of similar reasons, because, you know, this doesn't line up with this, you know, kind of thing. But I think in general, if you appreciate sort of the universe, the idea of Batman, sort of the general characters, and you can be okay with sort of changing things around and playing with that, because I think that's the fun part of it.
And I don't mind that. Like I said, it's just more that this movie doesn't really do much for me. Because I've seen people complain about the fact that I guess this was a story or a chapter in the Star Wars universe that had been covered in previous novels and stuff like that, and some people feel that the novels did it better. There's that.
Well, I also say that, like, definitely agreeing with Earl's point, I like to say that the director, Gareth Edwards, is, like, a huge Star Wars guy. You can definitely tell that this was directed by somebody who is a huge Star Wars person. Like, there was a lot of, like, little moments, a lot of Easter eggs that I won't, like, spoil for people who haven't seen it, but there's a lot of Easter eggs that have served no purpose except to remind you that this takes place before A New Hope. And a lot of those, like, for instance, my wife, she's not entirely familiar with Star Wars. She's seen them, but she's like, I would look at her when one of the Easter eggs would show up and she would just be like, why are you looking at me? And I'd be like, no, nothing. There's no recognition.
And I'm probably going to get hung for this. And I think it's a cool part of the movie, but like Darth Vader's intrusion felt like one of those things to me. Like, honestly speaking, he's not really relevant into the plot of the movie.
He's not entirely relevant, I guess. But you definitely can't have made this movie without including him at one point, or I would have been extremely angry, and Gareth Edwards understood that. We talked for a while and I explained to him what needed to happen. But yeah, I mean, I can agree with that to an extent, but he needed to be in the movie, so you're wrong.
Well, I mean, okay, even if he needed to be in the movie, I felt, okay, kind of, and, you know, I don't want to spoil it, even though it's not a spoiler, but the way they marketed it, it seemed like there would be a confrontation between Vader and the main characters. And that never comes to pass.
I like the, I didn't really get that, actually. I felt more like Vader was something that the director of the Death Star program, Krennic, was like a tool. Like he wanted to go to Darth Vader to go over Tarkin's head, because you can't get to the Emperor unless you go through Vader. That's it. So he just wants to, like, that the scene, the primary scene in which I think that you're kind of referencing, in which Darth Vader does, you know, you feel like he doesn't really, there's no point to it. Krennic is, he's playing politics. He wants the Death Star for himself.
Yeah, but
Tarkin takes it.
If you remove that scene, it doesn't really change much.
Right.
And then his second scene is more of an epilogue to the movie.
Well, do not insult the second scene.
It's more of an epilogue. It's more of a, like, oh, and this is what literally happened before A New Hope.
I'm okay with
that's
that.
That's what people wanted to see. They wanted to see what happened before A New Hope, you know?
Like I said, it feels like an epilogue, because at that point, the movie's primary plot is done.
Yeah, you figured out exactly how it happened. Honestly, you didn't need that end scene. You didn't need up until... This isn't a spoiler, because if you don't know this about the movie, then I don't know why you're seeing it. They get the rebel plan. They get the plans to the rebels. Like, honestly, after that point, everything after that point doesn't need to be in the movie. The scene with Darth Vader doesn't need to be in the movie. A lot of things don't necessarily need to be in it, but I feel like the scene, like, without those scenes with Darth Vader, it would be an inferior movie. And you're wrong.
And that's kind of my conviction with this movie, is I feel like so much of it is like, it needs to be here for X, Y, and Z, because we need to bridge the gap between the prequels and A New Hope, or we need to fill in these details. But it's not in service of this movie, necessarily.
It's in service to the fans.
Yeah.
And you know what? The more I look at it, this is definitely more of a fan service movie than Episode 7. Episode 7, people ragged on it for being a fan service movie. But looking back, I think people can definitely say that Rogue One was definitely more of a fan service, because it's literally what happens right before the movies
loves. And I think Rogue One should have been more fan service-y than in The Force Awakens, because Rogue One isn't necessary. It's not advancing the plot, really. It's filling in the gaps. The Force Awakens is really supposed to push the franchise forward going into the future. Like, there is, I mean, I guess they could do a Rogue 2. It wouldn't make any sense, but...
Yeah, it wouldn't. Rogue 1, 2. Rogue 12.
But yeah, so now that we spent an exorbitant amount of time on my dissension, what about you two and what you actually enjoyed with the film?
Well, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, so obviously I enjoyed a lot of the little Easter egg things, just because I was like, hey, it's this guy, or hey, it's this moment, or hey, they said this. I really enjoyed that part. I will say that the movie at some points seemed like it was jumping around a lot, and then all of a sudden, you know, but it was weird because it was jumping around a lot, but somehow it was like the same characters just moving to different places, and then you get like little things that says like, this is this planet, this is this planet, this is where this person is. It's like, okay, you know, they, you know, we don't really need that. We can look that up later. You know, 'cause I did anyway. But ultimately I obviously enjoyed the movie. I had my issues with Episode 7, but I still enjoyed the movie more than some of the other Star Wars movies. But I will say Rogue One didn't flow like a, you know, what you would imagine like a quote regular movie would. And also, to Earl's point, you know, I still don't know all the characters' names. you know, Luke, Leia, Han, those are easy things to remember. And, you know, I knew who Emperor Palpatine was, and they didn't even say his name in the original trilogy. Like, And they say these people's names in the movie, and I still don't remember them. Like, I remember Jyn Erso and K2SO because, well, yeah, Jyn Erso is easy and K2SO is letters and numbers.
What is the main dude's name?
Main dude? And like Carrion or Carrium or something? But honestly, yeah. Like, that's something else that I need to get out of the way. I don't watch this movie because I wanted to see the Rebels get the Death Star planes. I watched this movie because I wanted to see the Empire before the Rebels actually had a chance. Because those are the glory days. Like, I got to see Tarkin. I wasn't expecting that because, you know, I tried not to look too much into, like, the movie before it came out.
See, this is one of the most divisive parts about this movie. And so General Tarkin or Moff Tarkin, Grand Moff Tarkin to be, I'd get someone would say
something. Yeah, you show him some respect, Dan.
Right, he's like one of the head guys in the Empire. But the actor who played him died, and
1994,
so,
a long time ago.
Long time ago, and he's a really important part, especially of the first movie or Episode 4. So they did an interesting choice where they put him in the movie as a computer-generated actor. And I actually personally thought it really worked for me. I knew it wasn't – some people actually didn't realize it was a computer-generated actor, which is kind of crazy to me. But
my wife didn't realize that.
It's not a computer-generated actor. It's a computer-generated face.
Right. Yeah, it's just –
because there's an actor stand-in who does all the physical stuff, and then they superimpose the face. I think I play too many video games, because my first instinct was that is CG and it is creepy.
I thought it was actually really... I thought it was good. I don't know.
I did too. A little biased, though.
But it's because no matter how good CG is, there are just certain mannerisms, facial tics, and movement that the human face makes that you can't replicate. So you can tell when he's talking to other people that his face isn't natural, and it just took me out any scene he was in. But I'm not going to hold that against the movie, because like you said, he's an important character. It would be real. Faye is a pivotal role into the plot of this movie. And it'd be
funny, because so I didn't really have a problem with Tarkin. I actually had more of a problem with spoilers. Vader and I didn't like how Vader... I didn't like the voice work. I'm sorry, James Earl Jones, but it didn't sound the same to me. And I didn't like how the mask... I just didn't like the costume. It seemed a little like a fan costume to me.
I didn't mind the costume. I could be wrong. It seemed like they did something different with his eyes.
Yeah, apparently in the first movie he had like red lenses, but you can never... Maybe the quality of those movies is so bad you can't notice it, so it looks weird here. I don't know.
Well, actually, in the first movie, there's multiple times in which you can see completely through the lens into the actor, in case you haven't noticed that. But, yeah, it's like once you notice him, you just can't stop. Like, you just look at him, and it's like that, yeah, he looks pretty normal. Like, he doesn't look like all burnt up. But,
yeah, and then I won't say it, but there was a character at the very end that I thought was way more uncanny valley than Tarkin.
I agree. I was caught off guard.
And I think it could just be because said character's there for like 10 seconds. They probably didn't waste as much time.
Maybe. Some people thought that Tarkin bothered them, but then the person at the end didn't bother them.
I think it's because, it could be because it's like such a quick apparent.
We had a lot of time to dwell on Tarkin's face, and I could tell that it was CG for a lot of reasons, because I'm not an expert at detecting CG, but I can tell CG when I see it usually. Like, pretty sure the dinosaurs in Jurassic World are fake. I also knew that the actor who played Tarkin had been dead for over 20 years, so I was like, yeah,
your problem.
Yeah, I looked at him and I was like in my brain, as soon as I first saw him, I was like trying to figure out, is this just a really, really oddly like odd lookalike of Tarkin who sounds exactly like him? It took me like a good like 10 seconds to like process through all that.
And maybe, you know, I've been watching a lot of Clone Wars and Rebels, and maybe I'm just more used to like a CG Tarkin, because like he's in both of those.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, those are obviously much, much less detailed, but yeah. I mean, I knew it was CG, but I almost thought it was, it didn't pull me out of it. But I can see how it would be, could be weird.
The technology is getting to a point where I think if you are smart enough to hide it, like, most people won't notice. Like, I actually, like, going back, like, Fast 7, most scenes it doesn't bother me. Really, the big one is, like, when they have the close-up of Paul Walker at the end. Other than that, like, most of the time, it's not a big deal. Here, again, I think because, like, so many scenes is focused on Tarkin speaking to other people, you see him interacting with people, and that's when you kind of realize his face doesn't move the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, running not out of time, but I wanted to move on to sort of just, first I wanted to sort of put it, where do you rank Rogue One? And we talked about this a little bit on Twitter, Scott, but sort of where do you rank it in terms of the Star Wars rankings right now?
I'm actually a little confounded as to where I place it, because like I usually try to give myself, like, and not to sound weird, but I like to give myself some time before I give my 2 cents about where I place the Star Wars movies. Like, it took me like...
That's not what you mean? At all.
Oh, okay. Well, because I, like, definitely, like, right after I saw Rogue One, I was like, that was amazing. I loved it. Then the second time I saw Rogue One, I was like, that was amazing. I loved it. And, like, it was the same thing with Force Awakens. But then I sat down with myself, and we had, you know, a cup of coffee together, and we were like, listen... We were like, listen, I had some issues with it, and you're like, no. I was like, no, really? I was like, yeah. And then I talked about it, and I was like, yeah, there's issues. So then it moved down the totem pole. So Rogue One, I would definitely place above 1 and 2 because I'm a normal human being. I would still place it below Empire Strikes Back because, you know, that's still my favorite for... not mostly nostalgic reasons, but a lot for nostalgic reasons. Basically, where I'm hung up is where I place it regarding episodes 3, 6, 7, and 4. Because I kind of, well, 7 and 4 I kind of rank similarly. They're kind of like tied for second, or like very close second and third. But then I don't know if I like it more or less than Return of the Jedi, because I have a lot of issues with Return of the Jedi. A lot more like things that happen in that movie that bother me than some of the missteps I feel that Rogue One did, but I'm not sure. So I would, right now it's kind of like dead in the center. Like, I like it less than the movies that I already liked, and I like it more than the movies that I didn't like. It's weird. It's very hard to boot the other movies out of their spots.
Did you say where it ranked compared to 7?
7, I'm tempted to say that I liked episode 7 more. It's been like less than a week since I've seen the movie. I usually like to give myself more time to kind of like... Yeah. Think about it, but I'm tempted to say...
Right now, how do you feel?
Yeah, right now, I would say I like episode 7 better, and that's actually... I disagree on that point with a lot... Like, my wife liked Rogue One better than episode 7, and so did my brother. A lot of the people I talked to liked Rogue One better, and I can see why they do, but I, you know, disagree. I liked... And, like, it's very hard for me looking at the glory and beauty of the Empire and saying that another movie's better, you know? But right now, that's how I feel. End rant.
Okay.
Earl, where would you rank it? I'm curious.
That is a...
Have you thought about it at all?
I've not really thought about it. Partially because... I sounded down on the movie, and I kind of am. Like, I don't... I mean, I'd probably revisit it if I ever go through the series again. Outside of, I mean, easy, it's above 1 and 2. I don't think they would ever get as bad as 1 and 2. Would imagine I'd probably put it after all of the other ones. So after 4, 5, 6, 3, 7.
I was tempted to say this, to say the same. I'm still not sure where I place it. Like, the thing is, I really like the movie. I just don't know if, like, it had some of my favorite scenes in Star Wars. Like
I feel
the
like
ending scene, like with Darth Vader at that point.
I feel like the biggest hurdle with it in its placement for me is that of all the movies in the franchise, I feel like it's the one that's most dependent on your enjoyment of other movies in the franchise.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Because
And that also where that's where some of my personal feelings for it come from too.
you could say it's better than A New Hope, but it's better than A New Hope because it has it. You need A New Hope to enjoy it.
Right, you can't watch Rogue One. Like, you can watch the prequels and then watch 4, 5, and 6. You can't watch Rogue One and then Episode 4 and appreciate Rogue One. You know, I don't encourage people to watch episodes 1, 2, and 3 before they ever watch 4, 5, and 6, but you can do it, and then you can, you know, understand that.
Or in another way, and I mean, I don't think anybody's gonna do this. I don't think anybody will ever do this, but like, you can't watch Rogue One without having seen A New Hope, because so
Yeah.
much of it goes over your
Yeah.
head. Where like you can watch, okay, granted, you probably don't want to watch 5 and 6 without A New Hope, but you can kind of watch them and appreciate the movie for what it is. You can watch
Yeah.
Episode 1 and 2 and kind of feel sorry for yourself, but you can still watch them on their own and not necessarily need to worry about what came before or after.
They're movies that somebody who hasn't seen Star Wars before can watch and follow. They
I
don't
never want to
need
watch Star Wars
to.
again.
Right. And like, if you watch episode 2 first, like, I can understand why you would never watch Star Wars again. I'd feel bad that that was your first experience, and I would do my best to try to make up for it with you, but at least you'd kind of know what was going on for the most part without really, you know, like, you can tell, like, I can tell watching Rogue One that that's meant to fill pieces, because as a standalone movie, it's not like amazing.
And I mean, I guess this is a minor thing that we didn't talk about, and this is going in circles again. It's also fascinating because it's, I mean, honestly, it's the first Star Wars movie without Jedis in any capacity.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said about that choice and the fact that it's interesting that it is focused more on the people who don't have, the
The power, yeah.
superpowers
Uh-oh,
and
yeah.
I will say one super positive about this, and I think I joked about this on Twitter, but it is true, is that the climax of this movie is a much better Suicide Squad mission than the Suicide Squad movie.
It is, yeah.
They did a really great job of showcasing a team that is outcast, outgunned, outpowered, and like in every manner that just inferior to the opponents, but they do accomplish their mission.
Right, yeah. They definitely like going into that mission, like, I can see people having no knowledge of this is their first Star Wars movie. I can see people being like, how the hell do they do this? There's no way. Like, I was like, how the hell do they do this? How do they pull it off? Even though I know that they do. And then, it was just like a series of good fortune and good planning and the complete and the Empire just being like, we're too powerful to see things as a threat. And they ate too many donuts and were sitting on their butts and they got soft. And that was one of their biggest mistakes. And Rogue One was a tragedy for me.
So I wanted to quickly touch on sort of just the general Star Wars, because we're going to be getting a Star Wars movie every year for the rest of our lives.
I feel like
One can only hope.
I feel like that's going to die
And,
down pretty soon.
well, we'll see. I mean, it's possible. I think for at least the next 5 years, there's going to be one every year.
At least episode nine, I think they'll do that. But I do think...
After episode nine, they'll have the Boba Fett movie. Like, the Boba Fett movie's coming out after episode nine.
Okay, I guess that's what I was going to get to, because I feel like, and I could be wrong, is I feel like more people are interested in stuff around the original trilogy. Like, you don't know why they want you to throw in stuff around the prequels, and I feel like the Force Awakens trilogy is too new for people to... I guess you could fill in the gaps between, like, Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, but I don't know. I guess they would have to expand on that for us to care about what happened in between there.
Oh, I definitely think there will be movies. Yeah. There will be at least...
But, I mean, it seemed like the galaxy was mostly at peace during those times.
That's the thing. I was going to say that. It's mostly, for the most part, you're going to encounter a time of peace, except, you know, they are defeating the Empire, the remnants of the Empire, after episode 6, but it doesn't take them that long, and it's 30 years between 6 and 7. Most people are interested in between 3 and 4 because this is the Empire. This is the Empire establishing itself. It's growing. It's evil. It rules the galaxies. Like, people want to see that and see, like, seeds of rebellion growing, even though I hate rebellions.
To kind of use a wrestling analogy, it's like, people want to see the Monster Hill overcome. Nobody really wants to see the monster face. Nobody wants to see the good guys who beat up the bad guys all the time. It's kind of dead at that point to just see, like, the rebel. I guess they're not even rebels at that point. Disseminating the Empire.
Nobody wants to see them win. Nobody wants to see the Empire destroyed, like, ultimately and utterly, like the Battle of Jakku. Like, I don't want to see that. Firstly, it'll hurt my feelings. Secondly, it'll hurt my feelings too much. And secondly, it's just like, yeah, who cares? It's like, I would rather see the aftermath, like, you know, Jakku with the Star Destroyers in the sand and knowing that it happened rather than being, you know, forced at gunpoint to watch it. Because I would feel really bad. I like the Empire.
Right. Well, you know, just in a general sense, you know, there's a big pushback against Disney for both Marvel and for Star Wars in the fact that, you know, it's good, people like it, but, like, there's too much of it, right? There's this general sentiment from some people of that, whereas I think maybe Scott and I are a little bit biased and I would take 6 Marvel movies and 6 Star Wars movies every year. And just have
a month,
you know, every other month. But, you know, I think it'll, you know, the market will kind of decide, you know, how many there are. Yeah. But, you know, I think it's interesting the way that Star Wars has just come back in, not just movies, but just in, you know, there's more comic books about, and this has to do with Marvel's, you know, cross-promotional things. But
this is what I find funny, because... I mean, Star Wars has never really gone away, ever. Because there's actually less comic books. There's less comic books out now than there was when Dark Horse had the license. The difference is, like, they get marketed much better because they're from Disney and Marvel. Where, like, when Dark Horse had it, it's like Dark Horse is, like, the number 4 or 5 comic publisher. They didn't have the marketing muscle that Marvel does. Because I guess Dark Horse did, like, they did comics all the time, and nobody knew about them. I mean, other than diehard fans. The games, we've had one and a half Star Wars game since this revival with Battlefront and their part in Disney Infinity. The previous, you know, we had a ton of Star Wars games last generation. We had...
You bring up a good point. I mean, Star Wars has never gone away, but I think, you know, especially in games... I think in the, you know, next year is going to be very Star Wars heavy. Battlefront 2 will probably be the best-selling game next year, depending on if Red Dead comes out. But I think Battlefront 2 is going to sell ridiculous numbers. And, you know, there's the Amy Hennig game. There's the game by the other EA game. So... I think the games are going to start coming out more. It's the interesting thing. The thing that made me think about this was that last year at Christmas, these little kids who are 7 years old who did not grow up watching Star Wars, right, are playing around with Kylo Ren masks and Star Wars masks and playing around with lightsabers. And 5 years ago, I don't think that would have happened.
Yeah, I would say it has re-entered the pop culture zeitgeist much stronger, a much bigger beast than ever before. My chief concern, and my concern isn't like Star Wars is going to disappear overnight. That's not going to happen. But I do think that this, you can only burn so hot for so long before it just becomes a normal thing. Granted, it's their history, but you got James Bond, and like there was a time around Goldfinger and Thunderball where it was like the hottest property in the world, and it still remains a big movie franchise, but like the races don't necessarily have that thunder to them anymore. Like, yes, granted, Skyfall did amazing, but like, right. that was the 50th anniversary, so it was something special attached to it. And you know, like, and I assume they'll do it with Episode 9, but you know, there's also a reason that movie franchises tend to try to wrap up in trilogies, is because people go out to see the last movie in great numbers because they want that finality. It's the same thing with TV. The first episode does well, and the last episode does really well. Why people drop off in the middle and come back at the end, I don't know. But that's what happens. So I do think, if nothing else, they'll probably stop it for a bit, just to kind of go back and make, okay, we're back and we're ready for more. And then you can kind of get people amped up for it again. Because I do think like, you know, last year, The Force Awakens was the first Star Wars film in a decade. This one's a different story, but I do think in like 4 or 5 years, it's going to make, oh, it's Star Wars at Christmas again. It's not that.
Yeah. I will admit, I do foresee a time in which, not that I would dislike new Star Wars movies coming out, but that I would get accustomed to that. And part of the reason I love Star Wars is because I can put it on and just, like, you know, quote it, you know? Well, not like that, but it's very nostalgic for me. It was my childhood. Even like the original trilogy, and then even the prequel trilogy. I mean, people talk a lot of trash about it. I talk a lot of trash about it sometimes, but it came out when I was a kid. So I was a kid. I didn't look at it very, you know, like I didn't like have like a microscope looking at all the issues. Like I don't remember, but I might have liked Jar Jar Binks when I was 12 or whatever. I was like 8 when that came out. I probably liked Jar Jar Binks, but. You know, now obviously I dislike him. I look at it much more objectively, but I can imagine getting like almost resentful of Disney pumping out Star Wars and, you know, slapping on a lunchbox and you sell it.
Yeah, not resentful, but, you know, Dan kind of made this point. It's like, I look at Marvel films and I go see them all, but like at some point it's like, I don't have the same energy and excitement that I did like when the first Avengers came out, because they're known quantities. It's like, I kind of know I'm getting X, Y, and Z up until 2019, 2020 or whatever. And it's like, there's an excitement for some of them. Like, I'm still going to be excited for like the big team up movies, but like, you know, I wasn't that excited for Doctor Strange. I'm not that excited for Thor. Like, I'm excited. Guardians looks good, but I'm not like, it's not, like, oh my gosh, Guardians. And, you know, it's because you just get so many of them that they don't feel special. I think, you know, we had this discussion off air before we started. It's like, you know, like we were talking about The Wizard, and like, you can't really do that with video games anymore because like, they come out every year. It's like, Call of Duty isn't special. Assassin's Creed isn't special.
Well, that's the interesting thing that Assassin's Creed did, and I think video games are moving away from this. You know, the sales of Call of Duty were half they were last year, is video games are moving away from yearly releases. And it'll be interesting, you know, and it's fully based on the market, right? Assassin's Creed Syndicate did not sell as well as Assassin's Creed Unity because it's always the game before determines the sales of the next game. But I think there's going to be a shift and be less of a focus on yearly releases in games, and it'll be interesting to see if that hits movies at all, because it's really not been there really hasn't been a yearly movie franchise
outside of like horror.
You know, yeah, outside of horror, and usually those burn out as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it tests it. I think for me, something I just want to say is that, you know, Star Wars means a lot to me, and it was in so. Star Wars was in danger of dying a cultural death. At least that's how I felt about it. Like in the early 2000s, you know, I don't think the prequels are horrible, but I think that they, I still think in the, when you take them in totality, they reduce the movie, the later movies. And, you know, there wasn't, people didn't care about Star Wars. When those prequels came out, I was like, yeah, I mean, whatever, like, prequel, whatever. And Star Wars is exciting again. It's, you know, part of the culture. Sure, will it become oversaturated? Probably. And I think then there'll be a pullback. But I just think just the fact that Star Wars is not, you know, there was basically 30 years between good Star Wars movies. And,
yeah,
you know, you can debate about that, but I, you know, it's
no, I agree. Just,
yeah, it's but at the same time, I feel like that 30 years helped it. I feel like, you know, I guess it was different when you didn't have, like, part of the reason it's much different now for me, and I think a lot of us, is that we just get so much content to consume. Like, Star Wars, like, you look at Star Wars, like, what was that, 77? 78? There were not a ton of, like, blockbuster movies. We look at it now, and, like, Star Wars is, like, one of 20 movies. I mean, I'm not going to say it's one of 20 movies. It is the movie franchise right now. There's no denying that. It is, I think, you know, Rogue One is on track to probably be either the first or second highest grossing film of the year. You know, The Force Awakens is the third highest grossing film of all time. So yeah, that's, you know, that is the movie franchise. Just know, like, oh, it might be one of the best or whatever. It is the movie franchise right now. And not only that, to do it 2 years in a row, like, you look at, I could be wrong. You look at Marvel, for instance. And, you know, like, it was, you know, like, they've only had a few instances where they've had back-to-back billion-dollar films, and Star Wars is about to do it 3 years in a row.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and, well, you know, that's years. Not even counting all the money they make on toys and and everything else. And, you know, there's definitely a critical or cynicism you could take about Star Wars, the fact that it was, you know, mostly designed to sell toys, and
I don't mind that.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of accept that in our sort of culture with things like Transformers and Power Rangers, G.I. Joes.
Yeah, I mean, most sort of things. It's weird because, you know, we were both against it, and I assume there are some diehard Star Wars fans who won't admit it, but Star Wars is a kids franchise. I mean,
it is.
It's a kids, and a lot of franchises are. I mean, comic books were created for kids. Adults have co-opted it, but it's like,
the things that you get attached to the most are things that you loved when you were a kid, because, you know, it helps form who you are.
And to a point Scott was making earlier, as a kid, you do not question many things. Like, as an adult,
like, you don't question Jar Jar Binks when you're 8.
Yeah, you don't, like, Chewbacca doesn't make sense as a character. What? Like, it's a hairy dude who doesn't speak English, but Han Solo understands him perfectly fine.
Well, because he's speaking a language,
I mean, like, as a kid, you don't question that.
Right.
As a kid, you don't. Like, I would love to be able to have that mentality as a kid where everything's new and wonderful and creative. Like, as a kid, our generation embraced four ninjas who were turtles that were transformed into by ooze who were trained by a rat. And we had nothing to say about that. We just went along with the ride. None of that makes any sense whatsoever.
Right. And I think it's like sort of like how our you know, people our age are so weirded out by, like, Minions and the things that are popular with kids now, you know, we don't really understand. It's the same way that if we were
kids
30 years old when Star Wars came out, we probably wouldn't have the same attachment to it.
Like, I don't get Minions hate at all. And I think it's one of those things, because I see so many people hate Minions. I'm like, why? Like, as far as I know, they're inoffensive. They're no different than rabbits. Like, they might be annoying, but they're not for you. And that is something that I've had to embrace over the years when I did 151 proof movies, is knowing the difference between what's bad and what's not for you. Like, the Air Bud movies are not great, but they're also not for me.
Right.
That's a good point. I really like how you worded that. Like, something isn't necessarily bad, it's just not for you. And yeah, like, I don't enjoy Minions. They bother me, but I don't think they're bad.
Yeah.
Like, the bananas, I don't get it. Like, bananas are good, but stop talking about them. Like,
but yeah, it's one of those things where, like, and I like Despicable Me, but, like, they were minor characters in that. I don't know how they got their own movie. I've never actually seen that. I don't know how we got to that point, but, like, yeah, I enjoyed them. And I only bring that up because sometimes I think we sometimes ignore the fact that these were kids' franchises, not just when we were younger. And I think a lot of people grow up in these franchises and they want to co-opt it for themselves and not realize that you have to keep on getting a new blood. It's like when Dan's talking about, like, him seeing 7-year-olds running around in Kylo Ren mask and playing with lightsabers. That's really what it's about. That's why I don't have an issue with this being a franchise that was created to sell toys. Because most franchises
What I think is interesting about Episode 7 and Rogue One is the fact that J.J. Abrams and Gareth Edwards did grow up watching Star Wars. And, you know, you can tell they love Star Wars. And it's not, it's almost like the full extent of fan movies or, you know, whatever you want to call it. But there's a love from the, that they didn't create it, but that they love it and kind of revere it and that they want to protect it. And that's sort of a different perspective than Lucas, who created it and sort of had this different kind of view on it. And it'll be interesting to see how that, you know, how that carries on in you know, with Rian Johnson, who is an amazing director. I'm so excited for Episode 8, you know, and also Episode 9 with Trevorrow, who I'm not as big a fan of, but, you know, it'll be interesting because all of those guys love Star Wars, right?
I'm super excited for them.
They wouldn't do the job. And,
but sometimes we haven't run into this issue yet, but sometimes you can run into an issue where you can be too into something, and that blinds you to it. I mean, we saw what happened with Warcraft this year, which is a director, he's a huge fan of that franchise, and you're so into the nose that you just kind of realize that you're not speaking to just fans, you're speaking to everybody else as well.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely a concern of that. I mean, I'm a little worried about the Han Solo movie, just for kind of, you know, because of that, maybe. I don't know. I shouldn't really be worried. I mean, we don't have any idea to know one way or another, but it'll be interesting to see, especially in the non-core episode movies, if it starts to go that way, you know, especially with a movie about a character we know was played by someone else, in the case of Han Solo. It'll be interesting to see if that comes into it. And I do agree, there's definitely a risk of that happening. So far it hasn't seemed to happen, but it'll be interesting to see in the coming years. But we won't have a lack of Star Wars content to discuss in the coming years, so it's definitely not a subject that we won't have to
You know, I will say, though, before if we're wrapping up or anything, anytime anyone wants to release any movie or TV show or book or anything that has Darth Vader in it, you can do that, even if we're oversaturated.
I do think they'll make a movie that's focused on Darth Vader, and it will do really, really well.
Well, I mean,
yeah, because I'll be seeing it at least once a day for like 2 full weeks.
I was going to say, right. The problem with that though is, what if you run into a situation? Because you would have to lessen his impact for it to be a movie that goes on for more than 10 minutes.
Earl, these movies aren't for. They're making them strictly for me.
So we can talk about this another time, but there's a lot of, there's like books and comics about how Darth Vader wasn't super loyal and was sort of looking at ways of taking over himself. So I think that could be an interesting.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the plot of The Force Unleashed, should I just say.
Yeah, yeah. That could be something to go with. But
I think it sounds like Darth Vader's cheating on the Emperor. Find out Darth Vader's sexy secrets in Star Wars. The Vader Awakens.
Darth Vader's sexy secrets.
Yeah, I mean, they may try to go into...
Why did he go back to Yavin?
Did everything get burnt in that fire?
Who is he seeing on Naboo? Why is he back there? Is it about his ex-wife?
Nobody knows about his ex-wife.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So, yeah, Anakin Skywalker mysteriously disappeared the same time Darth Vader appeared. Weird.
Well, people knew he was Anakin Skywalker.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They didn't really know he was married.
Yeah.
I forgot that part.
Anyways.
Anyhow, I'm going to take this from Dan, just because I'm selfish. Also, because this is our last episode of 2016, and I think it's been a really fun... We've had a few headaches, but it's been a really fun reset for the show. So I look forward to 2017 with our more, you know... I don't want to say streamlined, because I think this is way past the hour mark, but our new approach, I've appreciated that Dan and Scott have both stepped up to the plate to host their own episodes. With that said, I believe Scott is up next.
That's correct.
We might delay that one and actually do kind of what we did at the start, more of a general awards of 2016. So TV shows, movies, comics, all that fun jazz.
That might be better for me anyway, because of the impending birth of my daughter. So
it's also something we could probably record, you know, with Christmas and New Year's both being on weekends, it just makes any recording time a pain in the ass for the next two to three weeks. And what Scott said, he is expecting a kid, which is just going to throw any hours he has out the window. But yeah,
unless you want to record at like 2:30 in the morning on a Tuesday.
I'm good. I'm good. And even then, who knows if Scott's going to be awake. Let's go with awake. Alert, I should say.
Yeah, it might be awake, but not alert.
So yes, again...
I will have an intimate knowledge of what poop smells like, though.
Again, thanks to Scott and Dan. Join us in 2017. If you want to find us, you can always check us out on nerdsontherocks.com. You can find us at Twitter at nerdsontherocks. Facebook, Nerds on the Rocks, Pinterest, which I don't ever use, same thing. You can find Scott at Gazelle87, Scott at Scott_@_night, and me at ER_NOTR. And happy holidays and have a happy new year.
That's all, folks.